in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Stephen Godfrey, welcome back to... Welcome back. You live here. This is your island as much as it is mine, but it is Phantom Island.
Maybe we split the island in half and we just walk to the midpoint once a week to say hello.
Listen, I had to share a room growing up with my brother, and I got to tell you, those systems don't work. They just don't.
I have two brothers, my two sons who share a very large room, and all I ever hear about is complaining.
Yeah.
But I don't think 11-year-olds are aware of the Nashville real estate market right now, so they should probably just shut it.
We're not here to talk about Nashville real estate. We are here to talk about our postseason college football fan survey, which we sent out to subscribers, paid subscribers to Phantom Island, phantomisland.show. That's where you go to sign up and get a paid subscription today, although this episode is free for all listeners. And we did this in the preseason. We asked people sort of what are your expectations for the season? What would success look like? How do you feel about your coach? If things don't work, what would you attribute that to? Who do you most want to beat? Who would you least like to lose to, et cetera, et cetera. And then we've now done, just after the national championship, which Indiana won, in case you haven't heard.
Hail Indiana.
Shout out to Homefield Apparel, presenter of this and every other episode of Phantom Island. We sent this out and said, okay, like similar questions. Talk about your season. Talk about your feelings about it. I have pulled a variety of stats, quotes, comparisons, preseason, postseason.
Okay.
And I want to start by talking about the teams that I said just missed the playoff. I have a handful of them, and I'm going to read them off to you just so you understand like how I tailored this. I said... fans of Arizona, BYU, Duke, Georgia Tech, Houston, Michigan, North Texas, Notre Dame, Texas, USC, Utah, Vanderbilt, and Virginia. I categorize those as just missed the playoff. By that, I don't mean like, oh, they all should have got in. I do mean that they got very late in the season with a path to the playoff, with a like control your own destiny path. In the case of Virginia, could not have been more control your own destiny. In the case of Duke, not so much a control your own destiny, like maybe the ACC championship will mean something. But I wanted to ask them sort of like, how did missing the playoff feel? How did that make you? How did watching the playoff make you feel about how your team would have done?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them said that the playoff itself did not change their opinion of how their team would have done if they had gotten in. Now, I didn't ask, like, do you think you would have done well or poorly, whatever. 27% said the way the playoff played out, it actually increased their opinion about how they would have done. So a theoretical Notre Dame or Vanderbilt or BYU fans said, yeah, I think actually watching the playoff, I feel like we would have had a better shot than I even thought at the time. And only 10% said it made them less confident. So overall,
that feels like normal football fans.
This group feels like, oh man, if only we had gotten our shot. So I think that part of the human football brain is still alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
Separately, I asked the teams that made the play, fans of teams that made the playoffs, how their team's performance in the playoff affected their opinion on the rest of the season. The predominant answer, not 50% plus, but the largest answer was that it had no impact. That the playoff didn't really change the way people thought about... If you made the playoff, what happened in the playoff didn't really change the way you felt about the regular season.
That's interesting.
Indiana and Miami obviously big outliers in feel better. It made me feel better about everything else. I get that. Most people just said, like, no.
Louisville must be really good.
But there were two teams that made the playoff that said the playoff experience actually made them feel worse about what their team did in the regular season. They were the big outliers in the negative category. Okay, who do you think those two teams were?
Please say one is Bama.
Nope.
Oh God.
Bama was kind of in the, like, it didn't change our opinion one. I think that's because
what?
Like, Bama's regular. I think Bama's, listen, Bama lost to Florida State. What could losing
in
to
week
Indiana
one,
do that would, I understand.
Boy,
Bama won one playoff game, and B, right. Bama's regular season didn't make them feel that good in the first place.
Okay, so you're asking me.
Yeah.
Of the
which
11
two teams said yes.
That I feel worse about the season after our playoff performance?
Yes, our playoff performance added, like, made me feel worse about how our season.
Okay, it's certainly not Indiana or Miami.
No, take those two out.
And I really,
right
really
away.
Don't think it's Ole Miss.
Nope.
All right. And so it's not Bama.
Nope.
So I'm down to eight teams. I don't think it's James Madison. I don't think it's Tulane.
It's not.
So I'm down to six.
Yeah, you're whittling down. Yeah.
It could be Oklahoma.
There was some Oklahoma opinion in there, but I think it's not Oklahoma. No.
Ohio State is one.
Ohio State is one.
This is an exercise not in statistics or sports ball knowledge, but of psychology.
Yes, and there is some statistics to it.
Ohio State, of course, would be one. I should have actually seized upon that quicker.
And there is some statistics to it if you think about, like, what was one of the narratives about Ohio State all regular season? That they're actually keeping it in third gear. That they are not like full murder machine. And the fact that they never turned into full murder machine when they needed to, I think makes people look back and say, like, oh, maybe that wasn't what was actually happening during the regular season.
Okay. All right. So talking this out now helps me refine and inform. It has to, the second team has to be either Georgia or Oregon.
Nope.
No? It's not Oklahoma.
So Oregon won two playoff games.
Yes.
I think it's important to know. And that is progress for them. Yes. And I'll say this for Georgia fans. I think Georgia fans have an incredibly healthy perspective about this season. I think they all recognize, and this may be because this is what Georgia media was telling them, that, like, they were a year early. They were young. The offensive line was beat up. Like, they understood what happened here. I don't think they were happy, and we'll get to that, about, like, how the season ended. No. The other team is Texas A&M.
What?
Texas A&M.
Okay, that makes no sense.
Why? Why?
That the performance in the playoff made them feel worse about their season?
Yes. Yes.
That makes no sense to me.
All right, where did Texas A&M lose?
To Texas.
No. In the playoff. Where was their playoff again?
At home.
At home.
In the first round to Miami.
Yeah.
Who went on to, you know, lose the national championship by what, a drive or two?
Was it a classic back and forth?
No, that game was ass.
Like, boy, both teams. Yeah.
That game was ass.
Did it feel a lot like Texas A&M failing to show up on a big stage?
Yeah, so really, it's almost like
after they had just lost to Texas, the team they hate losing to.
So it's more like, I just hate it. This the question is more like, do you hate yourself right now? And then I guess you could say Texas A&M. That's how it should have been phrased. So it's Texas A&M and Ohio State. Okay.
Texas A&M and Ohio State were the ones who had the biggest sort of, like,
you're off of a national championship and Texas A&M. Makes sense now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, most of the questions I asked were to everybody. Some of these questions I did try to tailor to, were you a playoff team? Did you miss the play? Were you just outside the playoffs? But most of this was just sort of about, like, let's talk about expectations preseason and postseason. I'm going to start with every team in the preseason. We said, okay, tell us how many regular season wins you would have to hit to consider the season a success. And then I said, I took that number and I said, all right, how many teams did that team actually win? And I have the four teams who there was the biggest delta between what fans said this would be the number we have to hit to have a successful season, and this is how many games we actually won. Four teams do you think, like, had the biggest?
And this is in the entire FBS.
Yes, although for a lot of these, I will say, I'm only counting, like, we got responses for lots of schools. I did try to limit. I did limit this to schools where we got at least three responses. I didn't want just one person to sort of.
And you
like,
said there's four of these. Outcome.
There's four. These are the four with the biggest gap between. If you can get to this, we'll be happy.
Okay.
And this is what you actually did.
So logic would inform us that it's the two Tiffany brands with the biggest disappointment season. So that would be Penn State.
Uh-huh.
Are they one of them?
Penn State is one. Penn State fans said 10.8 wins would be considered a success.
Didn't get
which
there.
Makes sense considering Penn State was like talked about as playing for national championship. And they won six.
So Texas.
Texas is not that far off, no.
Clemson
was also not particularly far. Clemson was pretty far. They the fans said 10.5, and Clemson ended up with seven wins, I believe.
Oh
so,
God, is it Florida State? Yeah.
It's not Florida State.
Okay,
no,
good.
Florida State fans. Florida State did rally.
That made me feel better.
I'll give it. So one of them's Florida. Florida.
Florida was my next guess.
Yeah, Florida fans said, if you can win a little over eight games, we'll consider that a success this season.
Okay.
And a lot of that had to do with the momentum of last year. Florida won four games.
Oh, Auburn?
No, Auburn. Wow. Auburn. A lot of this comes down to sort of like what expectations were. Auburn fans did want to get to eight or nine wins, and they won five.
So I have Penn State and I have Florida.
You have Penn State and you have
and
Florida.
Not Texas.
The other two teams go in different directions. One of them is a team that came in with like, okay, we have hot expectations and we should seize upon them.
Uh-huh.
And the season did not come anywhere close to those. The other one is a team that I would say was more, okay, we are just looking for stability. We're not looking to make the playoff. We're not even looking necessarily to make a conference championship game, but we want something respectable and fell way short of it.
Okay, well, neither one of those describes Michigan.
Yep. No, Michigan fans wanted a little over nine wins, and Michigan won nine games.
Yeah.
Michigan mostly stuck to the assignment when it comes to the win and loss column.
Clemson.
It's not Clemson.
Okay. LSU?
LSU is a good guess, but LSU fan. First of all, LSU won more games than you remember.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you the SEC team. It's South Carolina.
Ah, okay. Damn. Actually, I should have done that earlier. Yeah.
South Carolina fans said nine wins would be a successful season this year, which makes sense. Like, you know, we're close to crashing the playoff last year. Again, sort of like had a good end of the season, even though they lost the bowl game, whatever. Had Lenoris, had a Heisman, a big Heisman name coming back. Four wins on the season, a gap of five games between what was expected for success and what they actually
was one of them.
Kansas
State.
No, Kansas State.
Okay, I'm exhausting my disappointing. I'm out of disappointment. So who's
okay?
The
so here the other one is the team that's like was like please just be respectable, and it was Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech fans wanted about 7.5
okay,
wins.
Okay.
And part of that is that like I don't know about you once. Mm. Once Virginia Tech fired Brent Pry and sort of moved into coach mode.
Oh, he disappeared. You don't watch him.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
no,
like
no, no,
I was
no.
I was surprised, with the exception of the Commonwealth Cup. That was the only one I sort of was like keeping an eye on because of what it means in that rivalry and because of the season Virginia was having, frankly.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Virginia Tech only won three games this year.
No, I think that's I think that's common practice, right? If you are not a fan of another team in that conference and you're just a college football fan and they fire their team, unless there's some sort of extraneous or unique storyline, like the new Heisel coaching the offense for UCLA when they beat Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing where like the nation turned into an interim situation, right?
Yes.
But that's so rare. That's so rare.
Yeah.
Normally, you just out of sight, out of mind. As soon as they make that change,
yeah. All right, let's talk about let's switch emotions here. Let's talk about increases in confidence. One of the questions we asked in the preseason and the postseason was, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being fire him today, 10 being give him a lifetime contract, how do you feel about your coach? Now, mea culpa on me. In the postseason survey, I did not filter this for, do I mean the coach you fired this year or the coach you already hired?
Oh, boy. So well, then LSU's on the list.
And a lot of people helpfully did say, like, hey, this is who my rating was for. It said, like, hey, I split my rating way or the other. But we're just going to take, this is just for incumbents, guys who didn't get fired.
Okay, right? So we're not going to do the LSU thing.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk about LSU or
the
Florida
first one
or Penn
in the,
State.
Like I'm jumping to answer it.
So yeah.
Oklahoma.
Yes, Oklahoma is one of these as well. Brett Venables came into the season a 4.6 out of 10 and is now up to a 7.1, which I think is fair. Like, Oklahoma certainly is not fully back to where they want to be, but had a really good season in circumstances that were not ideal and did enough to sort of make you feel like, okay, yes, this is like... the path is here, especially with, like, I honestly thought, I was like, Brett Venables isn't going to survive the season. And Oklahoma way outperformed my unfair expectations, it seems. All right. So that's one of our four with the biggest confidence jumps. Who else you got?
A&M? No, because you did it after the season, so they'd be pissed, if anything. BYU?
No, BYU is, I think BYU, and A&M is another good example of, like, it's less necessarily we're pissed, but more like, A&M is actually happier with their coach now than they were entering the season, but they already started at a pretty high, they were already feeling good about Mike Elko.
Yeah. Okay. So let me rethink how I'm doing this then.
So what you're really having to think about is like, who came
it's
into
one
the
year
season
jumps.
Being like, I don't know about this coach. And now is feeling like, I feel pretty good about this coach. Yes.
It's tricky.
One's a school we've talked to. Yes, Tony Elliott was a 3 out of 10.
Yeah,
coming into the
it
season.
It should and be is now, Houston,
and is now seven. And is now a 7.3. Houston, we didn't get enough responses for me to tell you where they're at on this.
James Madison, although he left, so I'm thinking of 1 year.
Yeah, I'm only sticking with coaches who James Madison is in that category of like.
Yeah,
I don't know which coach I was asking you about. So it's only coaches who were there last year, there this year, and will be there next year, at least as this.
Okay, I don't think this is on here, but I think it's worth mentioning because it's a team that if you had put a gun to my head, walking into Sun Life State or Hard Rock Stadium, which happens in Miami, and you said this team, true or false, this team is in the selection committee's top 25, I'd be like, no, they're not. There's no way. Arizona. Are they on there?
Interesting.
Is Arizona on there?
I'm going to double check this.
I think Arizona very
fans...
Very quietly, 9 wins this year.
So, all right. We only got one Arizona response, so I can't totally
so you
tell
tossed
you how
it
much
out.
That
okay,
has
okay,
changed.
Okay,
yeah,
okay,
that's
okay.
That's how we landed there. All right, I'm going to give you the other two, just to keep us moving here. Sean Lewis entered the season pretty low.
I was thinking of power teams, and I did not expect us to get more than one San Diego State response.
Yeah, we got.
Shout
out,
Aztecs.
We did. Yeah.
Good job.
He jumped from a 4 to a 7.3 out of 10.
Okay.
And the other coach, which is interesting because I don't necessarily think they had an amazing season, and I'm kind of unpacking what this means. David Braun jumped from 4.8 to 6.7.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm
trying not to do the lazy jokes.
I do think there is some element of like he is maybe not to the same extent that like Brent Key is or something, but like this is a bridge coach who is showing potential for more than that. Maybe?
Yeah. Do you think any of it's informed by what's gone on at Michigan State?
I think it is, yeah. And I think it's also that, so David Braun, first year, goes 8-5. 2024 goes 4-8, and this year bounces back to 7-6, mm-hmm. including a bowl win, and the losses
extremely are, Northwestern.
Yeah, and like the losses are mostly excusable here. Mm-hmm. Also, here's the thing I forgot. Northwestern beat Penn State. They're the ones who actually ushered James Franklin out.
Yes.
And they did that on the road as well. So I think that probably counts for something. I will say, like, there is enough sign of life at Northwestern on a certain scale. Like, they beat Minnesota. They really beat Central Michigan.
You know what it is? Bowl game. Yeah. It's that they barely lost. They lost by one touchdown to Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then they won their bowl game. I think it's that simple.
Yeah, they also nearly beat Michigan in the game in Wrigley.
Oh yeah, so, that was also in Wrigley. There was a lot of weird games in Wrigley this year. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I understand that.
All right, I'll give you the easier category now. Which coaches had the biggest 1 year drop of confidence? And again, these are all coaches who I'm not counting coaches who have left. These are they were there entering the season. They will be there next year. Who are we seeing like the bottom really drop out from?
Dabo.
Yes. Dabo was still at an 8.4 out of 10.
This is tricky, and we're going to talk about Dabo this week on a Patreon episode, PhantomIsland.show, as I close out Coach Gossip. We're also going to talk about this individual, but who I don't think is on the list, which is Norvell, because...
Mike Norvell is on this list.
He is? Oh, they learned
most of these top four are guys who had high expectations and the season did not live up to them. Dabo definitely is one of them.
So Dabo and Norvell, Dave Aranda?
No.
Mike Loxley?
Geographically, Mike Loxley was pretty close to this measure. He didn't crack the top four. Matt Rule is the name you're looking for.
My next two guesses were actually going to be Shane Beamer or Luke Fickell.
Shane Beamer is here as well.
Okay.
Part of it honestly is that Luke Fickell did not come into the season with that much confidence. He was rated at a 4 out of 10 coming into the season. And while he has dropped to 2.9, there just wasn't a lot of room. At the same time, Mike Norvell came in at 4.4 and he is down to 1.3 out of 10.
Nice. It's going great.
Dabo went from 8.4 to 3.6 out of 10. Like, just a real bad. Matt Rule dropped nearly 2 points, 7.5 to 5.1. Shane Beamer, 8.2 to 4.4. If you're just sort of looking like who do fans sort of like have the dimmest opinion of right now?
Yeah.
It is far and away Norvell. It is far and away Norvell.
Yeah, that makes sense. Based on
the sitting.
Yeah, two weeks of off-season media. That would make sense.
Yeah. Loxley is pretty close to the bottom there as well.
Okay.
Fickell is not doing great either. But like, I think the biggest difference is that Loxley and Fickell, compared to some of these other coaches, they just came in with pretty low expectations to begin with. But the Clemson thing, I was surprised looking back that, like, Dabo was still in the, like, 8.5 category. And this season, I think both.
Everybody picked them to win the ACC, so that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, they were a popular, like, they're gonna play. They're gonna be contending.
That doesn't shock me. Yeah, I mean, they were coming off of a playoff bid, predicted to win the league again because no one. They thought, oh, maybe SMU. Like that was the So that doesn't shock me at all.
I think I gained a better appreciation for just how damaging this year was for Dabo in terms of like fan confidence.
Yeah.
Because of this.
And we've talked about it across multiple shows. We're going to talk about it on the Coach Gossip Show, PhantomIsland.show. Yeah. I think this tear on Pete Golding and Ole Miss and the state of the portal and stuff, I don't think it's helping him the way he thinks it is. I think it's actually hurting him.
It's not. It's with his core constituency. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to turn things around. Real quickly, I'll go through, because I mostly want to get into, like, we asked for also, like, specific thoughts on certain teams, and I want to get into those. The teams that were most pleasantly surprised that sort of had, I asked for their optimism going into the season, and then I asked for their assessment of the season at the end. Virginia had a huge leap. Virginia said they were going in at a 4. They ended at an 8.4, which is pretty good considering, you know, didn't win the ACC title, missed out on the playoff. Like, I'm glad that Virginia fans still appreciate the season for what it was. Northwestern fans, again, like, this big jump. I think a lot of it is their expectations were so low. They were a 2.7 out of 10. They jumped up to a 7.3. Oklahoma had a big jump, 5.7 entering the season, ended on an 8.3. And San Diego State, as we mentioned, started very low expectations, ended very high with an 8. Most disappointed teams, Clemson and Penn State. We've talked about them already. Like, expectations for these teams, optimism for both these teams was so high. And there's a chicken and an egg thing. Like, is that because the media was so high on these teams and was talking this up, or were there just, like, reasons to believe in them that never materialized? I don't know, but both.
I think a pattern's emerging that if you make a playoff bid is not a guarantee to future success, and everybody seems to think it is early on. So this year, you know, I'm looking at you, A&M and Oklahoma, you know, and Ole Miss, like, it doesn't become a birthright.
Right. South Carolina's on this list as well for the same reason. Like, I think optimism was a little more tempered, but the season just really didn't go well. And then Michigan State. Michigan State didn't necessarily enter the year with super high expectations. Their optimism was a 5.7 out of 10. Dropped all the way to a 1.3.
Well, I mean, 5.7 isn't high, but they put together such a poor showing that that makes sense to me.
It's one where when you sort of, like, look at it in a vacuum, you're like, I don't know. Like, you knew this was a rebuilding job, and maybe this is not. But this also was clarifying where I was like, oh, okay, this is why they really wanted Jonathan Smith out. Like, they were just, it was so unpleasant what they were having to watch and deal with. Arkansas, very dim assessment of things at the end of the year. They're down in the 1.2 category. I don't think the Silverfield hire has done a lot for them. Maybe it will. Who's to say? But you know, it's not all sad. There are plenty of teams here that are feeling pretty good about that. And again, this doesn't capture, like, Texas Tech came into the season feeling pretty good and feels even better on the other side of it. Indiana, obviously, came into the season feeling pretty good, feels even better coming out of it. So there were tales of success, obviously, as well. All right, let's get into, like, the team-by-team things. I'm going to give you a quote here. It's about the Alabama Crimson Tide. Quote from an anonymous subscriber. My most irrational Gump take: it's Saban's late-stage recruiting that's responsible for the end-of-season collapse, and once DeBoer has a full team of his guys, the run game and balance will fall into place.
What?
You heard that? Hey, I want to, this person made it clear that, like, this was their irrational Gump
opinion. I like opinion. It. You know what? I mean, I like it just because I haven't heard that one. So, yeah, variety. Yeah. Yeah. Variety being the spice of life. Sure. Okay. Great.
I will say, generally speaking, I think Alabama fans are, they're not as fired up as I thought they would be. Or at least they're a little more, bit more like wait and see. And I think that's a fair reflection of, like, okay, we've seen you beat Georgia. We've also seen you get pasted by Georgia. We've seen you, like, mount what is a pretty impressive comeback on the road in a playoff game, and we've seen you get destroyed by Indiana in a different playoff game. Like, it probably the most frustrating thing if you're an Alabama fan about the Kalen DeBoer experience through year two is that there are lots of indicators in both directions. Like, it's not, there's not consistency up or down, and that makes it, I think, hard to sort of, like, come to a conclusion about whether this is going to work or not.
They have a very manageable slate this year, all the way until October 10th is when they play Georgia. So, just throwing that out there.
From an Auburn submission, quote, honestly, scoring 3 points at home, against that Kentucky team is so bad, it's kind of impressive. I asked the respondents to pick their favorite win and their most painful loss.
Yeah.
Kentucky was by far the Auburn pick for...
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Listen, in most of these, like, the rivalry game really mattered, win or lose, whatever. Auburn fans were so pissed about that Kentucky showing. So pissed that it... Yeah, it's kind of... I think it will be worth at some point going back and sort of saying, like, how feckless this offense was for so much of the season under
Ryan,
Auburn. Like, to the
Ryan,
point where, like... Yeah.
They lost by 7 to a playoff team in September.
Yeah.
They lost by 6 the next week to a playoff team. They lost by 10 to the SEC champions the next game.
Mm-hmm.
They lost by 6 to Missouri, a playoff fringe
team. In a game that went to overtime, I think, right?
Yes. So, like, how you characterize Auburn dramatically changes the conversation you're having. And now that he's like dead and gone, you can say this without having to worry about a repercussion. Like, Hugh Freeze so bizarrely had this lopsided team that was so talented on defense and so bad on offense that they could hang around and lose the match on a decision. You know, they could go 12 rounds with the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And lose by a possession, which is fucking, it's, except then you get to Kentucky and Ryan, the defense held them to 10 points.
Yeah.
It's a 10-3 loss. That is the exasperation point for sure.
It makes you realize that I think, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, okay, Hugh is cooked. I think this was a lot closer to a survivable season than I really realized.
I mean, yeah, here's how. I can do this in 2 seconds. They're 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
So flip the Kentucky game, and they're 6-6. And then flip one more
and
of these
flip
games.
Flip the Mizzou overtime game.
Or they lost 16-10 at A&M.
Yeah.
They had Oklahoma for a minute. Like, just switch two of those games, and I guarantee you he's stuffing his ass off for more NIL.
I bet you could only flip the Georgia game, and that probably would have done it. Like, the significance of beating Georgia probably would have been enough.
Yes, to keep absolutely.
It going, but it's not what happened.
Absolutely.
Clemson, most enjoyable win was South Carolina. Other than that, Clemson fans don't have positive shit to say. And this is one where I also realized that if you go back and look at the Clemson schedule, and a thing that I think is why this season has such a sour taste in the mouths of so many Clemson fans. You go through the wins. Do you know how many teams they beat that finished the season with a winning record?
Clemson?
Yeah.
I'm not going to look.
It's
3.
2.
Okay.
It's 2.
Yeah.
One of them is Louisville. I remember that game because that was, I think, the same night we did the live show in Athens. And I remember watching the end of this. And Louisville.
Yes.
Louisville fucked this game up. Louisville should have won this game and fucked it up in multiple ways. And the other one was Troy. Week 2 against Troy. That's it. The rest of this is like the wins are UNC, Boston College, Florida State, Furman, and South Carolina. Like, it is so much. The fact that they made a bowl is really a like, you managed to beat mostly the worst teams on your schedule. You did lose to Syracuse, who didn't have a great year. But like you mostly just feasted on the teams that were really having a bad season.
Okay. Yeah, that would track.
I did want to get this quote from a Delaware fan who submitted, because it's something I'm going to keep my eye on. Quote, Delaware hit the sweet spot of having a very good 7-win opening FBS season, and yet not great enough to get rated in the transfer portal. 2 starters have moved to power conference programs. Otherwise, there will be plenty of returning starters with a year of FBS experience.
How myopic. God bless you, fan.
But you know what? You and I are different.
Is that a good attitude, Ryan?
I think it is. Well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but I'll say this. I think you have a more traditional approach to off-season prep where you read the magazines and talk to certain people or whatever. Uh-huh. And I instead like to cherry pick. And I'm telling this Delaware fan, one of the things I'm going to cherry pick of like, ooh, Delaware was like, had a good transition year last year and didn't get picked apart in the transfer portal. So mentally, when somebody's like, who's a dark horse that you think could like make some noise, I'm going to use Delaware, just sure. Stealing this person's logic completely.
Okay. Yeah, sure. All right. I'll ride with that just because I like Delaware. And they sent me gear.
That's right. The Duke fans who responded in our survey all picked the ACC championship game as their favorite win. What do you think they picked as their least favorite loss? Most unpleasant loss.
Oh man, I'm struggling to remember the Duke schedule. Can I look it up and guess?
There are five losses, so you can go ahead and see which one you think it is.
Duke lost five games? I hadn't heard that. We beat that into the ground. Okay, so they're nine. I'm going to call them out.
Okay.
Illinois, no. Tulane, probably. Probably not Georgia Tech. Virginia and UConn. Okay, I think it should be Tulane. Is it Tulane?
No.
Is it UConn? Because of basketball bullshit? UConn. Oh my God. You nerds.
All right, we're going to talk about Florida in a sec here. Before we do, we're going to hear a quick word from our friends at Home Field Apparel. This episode is brought to you by Home Field Apparel, providers of high-quality, beautifully designed, exceedingly comfortable jackets, fleeces, shirts, crewnecks, hats, and so on and so forth. Now, you may understandably be suffering from Indiana football fatigue at this moment in time. Great news. Home Field has all kinds of gear celebrating all kinds of college sports, like hockey and basketball. But what if Indiana is on a generational tear in hoops as well? Maybe we're doomed to kneel at the altar of Hoosier excellence I just checked the men's Big Ten standings, and yeah, I'm not super worried there. And Indiana's women, they are kind of going through it too. But maybe you root for one of the seven Big Ten women's teams currently ranked in the top 25, or one of the nine SEC squads in that same poll. In this upside-down world where Indiana is your football god, has UConn basketball fallen apart? No. The men have lost one game and the women are undefeated. Purdue, you're number 12 in the men's top 25. Nebraska, you're ninth. And there are the Michigan men sitting at number 2 with the coach that, don't say this too loud where home field can hear it, Indiana kinda really wishes they had just hired. Now, why am I reading you these soon-to-be out-of-date rankings? Because as conference tournaments and March Madness get closer and closer, home field will start preparing celebratory items for these schools, which again, are not Indiana. Your Hoosier fatigue will yield as some other colleges celebrate basketball glory. No more of Cignetti and his Googles. All right, let's get back to the show. All right. I've talked about Florida Gators more than I wanted to over the course of this season.
Which means at all,
truthfully. Although I will say, if I had filled out this survey and you had asked me for my favorite win, Florida fans were kind of split. Some of them said Texas. I would not pick the Texas win, although I do think it's funny that Florida ended up keeping Texas out of the playoff.
Okay.
I think that loss was the one that ultimately sunk them. But I would pick Florida State. I know Florida State wasn't as good, and I know it means less. But the way Florida beat Florida State, running the shit out of the ball and dominating physically, like, and also Billy Napier wasn't there anymore, so I didn't have to be like, well, what does this mean?
I think that's the real part of it, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
USF tended to be the most unpleasant loss, which makes a ton of sense.
By the way, just buried the lead. Of course it was your favorite win. The other, I mean, like, if not that, it had to be Texas because the other ones were Mississippi State by 2 and Long Island University.
Yeah. No, I understand there weren't that many to choose from. Thank you. I understand how the math works here. Of the losses, of which was the most unpleasant, there were plenty to choose from. Most of the Florida fans responded to the survey picked USF, which I think makes sense just in terms of what was there and what was not.
I thought it would have been Miami because that was such a pillaring.
I think it's a sequencing thing, and it's the way the USF game ended. USF marches down the field for a game-winning field goal, what ends up being a short game-winning field goal on a drive that is, like, marred by dumb penalty. It's just a perfect Napier drive, honestly. But I did have this quote I wanted to share. I was all in on Napier heading into this past season. This has taught me that I'm susceptible to scams and shouldn't be trusted with credit cards.
Yeah. This entire season was like one of those AI deepfakes where you're like, oh, my grandmother's being held hostage. She needs $10,000 in crypto right now.
What would you say Florida State fans said was the worst loss this year?
Florida State fans' worst loss of the year. I don't know if they share the mirth. I don't know if they're that hung up on losing to the Gators.
No. I mean, some people pick Florida, but if I had to say sort of what the plurality was,
I'm going to go with their first loss. I'm going to go with Virginia.
Interesting.
Which means no.
Stanford is the one that got picked out most.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm trying not to laugh, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there's just so much about, like...
That wasn't a Friday night game, yet feels very much like it happened in the bowels of a Friday evening.
You could tell me it happened Wednesday at 11:30 Eastern, and I would believe you, honestly.
Nobody was watching that one. Yeah, that well, the other thing was that's four in a row.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Into a bye, Ryan.
Yeah, it was four in a row, and it was also, like... This will be the get right that, like, we will turn it around at this point, and it will be, and it wasn't. Mm-mm-mm. It just wasn't fine.
No, not at all.
All right. Georgia Tech. Most people picked Clemson as the best win. The mad dash to get on the field goal kick. What I think was a school record.
Cool. Yeah, that was cool.
Field goal to win the game. Hadn't beat Clemson in a while. Like, you know.
That was the one where he flexed afterwards, where he's like, we've been winning these kind of games for a while. And then
That's right. They were split between Pitt and Georgia for worst loss, which makes sense because the Georgia loss obviously has a ton of meaning to it. And the Pitt loss was one of the worst executed games Georgia Tech has played. I think
it's the Pitt loss personally. Yeah.
And there was obviously, like, losing to Georgia stinks, but that's not what kept you out of the ACC championship game. It was the Pitt loss that did that.
No, you got smoked by Pitt, by the way. And yeah, I understand the long-standing existential issue and the angst with Georgia. But again, was it seven? Yeah, 7-point loss. Yeah, touchdown.
Yeah,
one possession.
This quote from Georgia Tech fan who submitted: despite the late season fade, this was the best and most enjoyable season since 2016. You could see the engagement by students ramp up on campus, and Bobby Dodd had several games with tremendous atmosphere. Getting ranked and Haynes King getting some national publicity was a tremendous boon to the program.
Yeah, so that's easy to explain, and this is how the marketing and ticket sales people in that side of the AD sort of like hive mind thinks. Georgia Tech was 8-0. Mm-hmm. When's the last time that happened? They beat Colorado. They beat Dion on a Friday night on the road when you know it was still a big deal to beat Dion in Colorado for the amount of media attention that received. And then they beat Clemson and started coasting. I know. They had a 1-point game against Wake. They probably should have lost. But my point is, they kept winning.
They should have lost that game.
And they kept stacking wins. And so think about how long you feel good, whether the game is stressful or not, or you squeak it out, or you dominate. You go into Sunday and the entire next week, we won. So it's, 8 weeks, so 9 weeks with a bye before they lost and had a really bad defensive game, kind of similar to Pitt against NC State. Ryan, that wasn't until November 1st. They had 2 months plus week zero-ish of just good vibes. Two solid months of Georgia Tech football with good vibes.
Mm-hmm. This is probably a thing, whatever. We'll have a small production meeting right now. Sometime this offseason, I would like to dig into how marketing and fundraising have changed in this era, where if you are a Georgia Tech, if you are frankly like any one of maybe other than 12-ish programs, where it becomes incumbent on you to like seize these moments during the season, where Georgia Tech beating Clemson, even though there's still a lot of season left and there are a lot of goals on the table, I think it has changed where like you need to now be activating
quickly.
And going out and raising money quickly and relentlessly in a way that I think you didn't before, where it was sort of where the cadence was like at the end of the season is when we come to you and sort of talk about, look what we did.
Yep.
Couldn't we do more? And now it's like it's become much more frenetic about like when you have momentum, you have to seize upon it right away with your money base.
A lot of people ask about the Ole Miss NIL because it's created so much like success relative to Ole Miss's place in history up until this era. And one of the things I noticed this year in my like personal life, social media, which I don't have a ton of, was people like re-whatevering on Instagram and on not really Twitter, but like, but they did this on Twitter too. They would boost as soon as Ole Miss won a big game.
Yeah.
They LSU would or whatever. Sunday morning. Yeah. So the Sunday morning after LSU, there's a huge appeal that goes out immediately to help the Grove Collective. The right after they beat Oklahoma, same thing. I remember those two specifically. I'm sure they did it every week because Ole Miss won a lot more than they lost last year. But after a particularly big win, like LSU stands out, the Egg Bowl, like just because you beat that team that if you live in the state or the region, like you care the most about, it gets people to your point where when they're like at their their most emotional.
Yeah.
In a positive way. They seize upon it. It's the reverse of like fire that bastard. I'm skipping church to sit on this message board and holler at people. Right. It's like, man, wasn't beating LSU great? Give us an extra $500 right now.
Yeah, right.
Or 5,000.
50,000. Who's to say? This is the one quote. Indiana fans obviously feel great. No amazing surprise here. I did want to bring this quote in though. It was a pleasure to finally be the target of crazy conspiracy theories from fans of other teams. We finally belong. Congratulations, Indiana. I think that is actually an important marker that not only did you win a national title, but there will always be people out there who think that it's bullshit that you did and you had to cheat to do it.
It is like getting, I mean, it's like getting an award versus like having the number one film at the box office. Like one is like, you know, one is subjective and one is objective. And I do think being selected as, damn it, there's a conspiracy down there, they're cheating, Paul, is like that really is like, oh wow, like I thought I was a pretty good actor, but now I have this little golden statuette that confirms it.
Maryland, the quote from a Maryland fan in this survey, quote, "In the preseason survey, I said that Maryland would only win four games. This team still managed to get my hopes up, making me feel even worse about how things went." I don't like Maryland continues to be a truly baffling team at this point because I don't know. Yeah.
The three schools that as we start to like clean up and sort of start to box up this year, put it on a shelf and move on. Maryland had one of the most Maryland seasons of all time in terms of hopes elevated, hopes crushed, powerful shame for you ever even thinking it would be anything other than that. Mm-hmm. You had the surprise Arizona season that I talked about earlier in the show, and then also like kind of another Pitt super weapon year. And so unless you're fans of those individual teams, you don't really notice those things. But this Maryland season, if you had to sort of like create Maryland derangement syndrome, it's up there. I know there have been other seasons when they've won more and more significantly, but also, Ryan, it's a clean sheet. Maryland went 4-8. They were also 4-0. It's like bar trivia.
Yeah.
Can you name the 2025 Big Ten team that started 4-0 and finished 4-8?
Yeah. Looking at their schedule here, it's also that after the 4-0 start, 4-0 could have been 7-0. They lost by 4 to Washington at home. They lost by 3 to Nebraska at home, and they lost by 3 to UCLA on the road. After that, things turn pretty bad, and there's some like there's a 25-point loss to Michigan. There's a 15-point loss to Rutgers.
Rutgers brought that wood, which might be an indicator something's wrong.
There's a 24-6 loss to Illinois, and then ending the season with a loss to Michigan State that effectively didn't mean anything to Michigan State, but like really, yeah, this is tough. I feel bad for Maryland fans because like there is no it feels the most like, oh, this X-Wing is so stuck in this swamp and the Force isn't real, so we can't do anything about it.
See, Marilyn reminds me the most of like when Bomani will periodically slap my hand on social media for being like, you got fired up about the 6-2 Falcons? Mm-hmm. Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Like, it's hard to develop sympathy for Marilyn fans when they will tell you that, oh, this is going to hurt.
Look, but you have seen the Falcons play in 2 Super Bowls. I know what happened there. I'm not trying to drag. Like, you have seen.
Yeah.
You have seen, like, whoa.
I know, but it's September, really good, Maryland, Ryan.
I get it.
October 15th, every Maryland football fan's like, this time my finger's going to be faster than the electrical socket.
That's right. Who do you think Miami fans listed as their favorite win this year?
Oh. Is it Ohio State?
It is Ohio State.
Yeah. You know why? Because I'm learning more about the very sort of confounding... We had an off-mic discussion about this. I'm learning more about this very confounding thing that is the Miami fan base. And it's that breed of asshole would have so much mirth from beating that other breed of asshole that, like, yeah. I wonder how many weightlifting programs were discussed in the Cotton Bowl.
Sure.
If there was any friendly banter between those fan bases. How many people were on pre-workout for a football game?
I think Miami has done actually a very good job as a program of navigating the whole the U is back thing. Like, there are obviously, like, Michael Irvin's on the sideline for the whole playoff, whatever.
He's beating people with a belt and screaming.
Right. But I think there is not this sort of, like, obsession with nostalgia that they could have and other programs sometimes do. I think, like, Mario Cristobal has actually done a pretty good job of being,
yes,
like...
Mario trying, has, yeah.
Yes, we're trying to build something modern. Like, we are proud of our history, but we are not ensnared by it. That said, the Ohio State game felt the most like, oh, this is what you want the U to be. This is what you want Miami football to be if you have been a fan of this for 30 or 40 years or whatever.
Yeah, I would say so. I still think there's a significant disconnect because Miami's fan base is made up of so many casuals, non-alumni, and people who cling to the hashtag culture. Sure. I do think there's much, much more of a vocal, like, celebration even now of it is the U is back, you know, the smoke mm-hmm. and all this bullshit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The program itself has done an exceptional job, and that's really Mario of saying, like, you can't go back to that.
Right.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I also just think I think game recognize game, and I think asshole recognize asshole, and I just imagine it. I mean, and like, all jokes aside, that is the defending national champion, and like, sure. It was a game that I didn't think Miami would win. I thought that Julian Sain would have a better game. I thought that Ohio State. In a game of talent on talent, I still expected Ohio State to out-scheme them, and they mm-hmm. didn't. So, yeah.
Yeah. Missouri, very briefly, I got to tell you, we as much as we complain about what college football has become and how bad we feel about where it's going, God, Mizzou fans were so happy to beat Kansas. Kansas didn't have a good year. It's not that meaningful of a mark for your program, and yet they all picked it as the win that they were most happy about. And that makes me still feel like there are still good parts of the sport and that there are still, like, parts of this that make sense to me.
I don't want to take anything away from that because I agree with you wholeheartedly, but you start going over it, there really was no other option.
Yeah, so this is the quote that I'll use to sum up Mizzou. Yeah. Mildly excited that 8-5 is deemed an unsuccessful year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Makes sense.
Also, pent up on Kansas. It had been a while since they played.
Yep.
There was no conference game. They've beaten Auburn in the past.
Yeah.
And they're not, like, they're certainly not going to say it's Arkansas. So it's like, where else were you going to draw from?
Yeah. I think if they could, they were in the Alabama game. I think if they had pulled that out, that might have jumped it.
Sure.
But it probably would have still split the ticket. Ohio State somehow was not unanimous that everyone else, like, that everyone picked Michigan as the best win, because one person put Texas as the best win. I don't totally understand that at all,
especially in week one.
But I appreciate that everybody else put Michigan.
And you already beat Texas last year. I think that's true. Someone was, that's tampering. Yeah. Bad voter.
The worst loss, again, Miami and Ohio State seeing each other. Pretty much everybody pointed to Miami as the worst loss.
Yeah, because I don't think they thought. They didn't expect to lose that game.
Yep.
They lost to the national champion by a field goal, and they mm-hmm. think that they could. They think like, "Hey, we round two, we got him."
Yes, so. And I think there's also one of the side effects of like losing to Indiana in the Big Ten championship game specifically. There is a thing that's happening now, and I understand that Indiana is literally proof that it's not necessarily true of like conference championship games don't matter. I think Ohio State fans could very quickly get into like, well, we didn't even make the conference title last year and we still won the national championship.
Yeah, so they don't give a shit about that.
How bad
stuff.
Can this hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it has to be the game you lost in the playoff because it was the national champion. You feel like you really felt like you could have beaten. And honestly, of all the teams, they might have one of the better claims of that just because of the way that it went in Indianapolis. And also like the Ohio State fans I know in my life outside of our job, they're like, oh, we would have beaten the piss out of Ole Miss. Like there would like, cause that was who they would have had next. Like we would have fucking killed Ole Miss and we would have rolled in. We would have had four quarters of game tape on Indiana. We should be back-to-back champions right now. So that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Ole Miss, there's too much emotional complication to really
say. Oh, my God.
The Ole Miss season. I will say, everybody who submitted a response to this poll did pick the win against Georgia in the playoff as the best win. And I think that makes sense.
Sure.
If only for it was the best encapsulation of how fun it was to watch Trinidad Chamois this season.
Yeah, at least if you were not affiliated, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And
yeah,
it's a bummer that it sort of got lost in like everything that happened with Trinidad this season,
mm-hmm.
the way he came into Ole Miss, like the unexpected nature of his ascent, the games that he won, the way in which they won a lot of those games, like it does just sort of objectively suck that like everything about the Kiffin situation stole so much spotlight and attention from that.
Yeah. Get ready, LSU fans. He is not afraid to suck the oxygen out of a player's moment. Just letting you know. Yeah, for Ole Miss, it makes sense because, did they do a hardest loss? I guess it was Miami.
There was sort of we did do a hardest loss for Ole Miss. I'm pulling it up right now.
There's only two, so.
Quote. I think more people said Miami, but it's kind of split. Some people said it was Georgia in the regular season. Some people said it was Miami, but I don't think that there certainly wasn't like a strong feeling about it. I can say that at least with Miami, I think there was some sense of like the car had to run out of gas at some point.
Well,
like,
but that's
the reality
what I wanna,
of it had to set in.
That's what I want to bring up. Ole Miss just made the Final Four. They played in how many games? 15. They played in 15 football games, Ryan. Mm-hmm. They won 13 of them. They lost one SEC game all year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in so much pain right now because of this insane storyline, right? That's what's like, if you actually asked what was the hardest loss of the year, it wasn't losing to Georgia on the road in midseason. And it wasn't even, like you said, running out of gas. Your defense really running out of gas against Carson Beck. It was, we lost our fucking coach in the middle of the greatest season in modern history for Ole Miss. Like that, it's in any other circumstance, they should be beyond elated, even losing to Miami, right?
Yeah.
And yet, it doesn't match up at all. There's a weird sense of mourning around that program.
So it's tough because, and this is something that they put in the comment, that Ole Miss fans put in the comments that was helpful from a perspective point of view. This was not supposed to be the old, like last year was probably supposed to be the Ole Miss year. So I think there is still some appreciation of like, oh, even with all of the drama and mess around it, it's still an amazing, like it's still crazy that we won 13 games in this year with this roster, and even the circumstances kind of add to it in some way. I think that's why, like, I don't know, if I had to sort of put if I had to make a bet on it, I would say like more Ole Miss fans will look back and think about the Georgia game in the playoff and say like, nah, this year ruled in a way that makes sense to us as Ole Miss fans who naturally feel bad and frustrated about the world. Mm-hmm. But it was like the world told Ole Miss, fuck you. And Ole Miss had some opportunity to say, fuck you right back.
For a little while, yeah. It just depends on like what LSU does next year, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, he did work him over a little bit in the portal towards the end, and so I'll be fascinated to see how nasty.
What the preseason version of this looks like.
I mean, let me go ahead and spoil something. The Ole Miss LSU game is in September, weirdly, in 2026. Mm-hmm. That is going to be the biggest college football game of the year. For until the next biggest college football game of the year. I think it's in like week four. Nothing's going to come close to that. It's going to be an absolute intolerable, insane zoo. I think by some virtue of the hiccup of the scheduling, they're back in Oxford, even though they played in Oxford this year. So just go ahead and get ready. It's going to be, if they lose that game, right? The loser of that game, Ryan, is going to be devastated.
It is back in Oxford, and it is LSU's third game of the season.
Oh, gosh.
So it's early. Yeah, and that's it's so early that, like, we won't really have fully formed opinions about either of those programs.
No.
At that point, probably.
Probably.
All right. Penn State. Whew.
Yeesh.
I'm just going to – I only pulled one quote. Watching Indiana win it all the year it was supposed to be us was a mind fuck.
Yeah, I think that's as succinct as and yeah, that's as tight a summary as possible. That feels like 2 years ago now because of the timing of the firing of Franklin, him getting another job and starting his shtick all over again kind of before the year ended, and then the prolonged search for Campbell. So it just feels like the Penn State disappointment happened 2 years ago.
Yes, it's also like peppered in there, and I don't think it's the main thing because I don't know how real it was, or I don't know like how much it was like a thing they were pushing for. But like, if my memory is correct, the Franklin getting fired is what triggers Cignetti getting the extension and saying he's staying.
Yes, yeah, no, that's correct. That's correct. Yeah.
And I think there is some port of like I don't think it's the main thing, but it is a little bit of an extra twist of the knife of like, oh right. And this guy decided he didn't want to come here and he wanted to stay in Indiana and then proved that that was the right choice by winning the fucking national championship.
I like that we're just continuing to see the Penn State-Indiana rivalry deepen in its richness. I thought 2020 was a one-off.
Purdue, similar sentiment. Quote, seeing the internet fall in love with Indiana, the plucky underdog story, was personally devastating. Because don't you all understand that these people, Indiana fans, are pure absolute evil?
Purdue needs to call up Auburn and go have a beer.
It's tough because, like, when Penn State fans are pissed about Indiana and the Cinderella story, whatever, it's like, okay, you're Penn State. Like the fact that your problems are yours.
Yeah.
You deal with it. For Purdue fans, I am like, yeah, this does kind of suck.
Oh, no, man. It's pure like, old. This is pure like Old Testament. I've been smoten. God hates me for sure. There's fire from the sky. Yeah. With that.
Yeah. Cause like thinking about it, it's like, okay, Purdue obviously has not had a ton of high level football success, but at least could sort of say like, we have those waves where we have the Joe Tiller years. We had Drew Brees. We had Mike Olsen. You know, you can point to enough sort of inflection points of like, hey, we've had good times and now Indiana just fucking blows by them. And it's got to just, that sucks.
Yes. It is funnier to think about now that I'm dwelling on it. Like Penn State, it's like, shut the fuck up. You had all the agency in the world. Purdue looked up from their terrible lot in life in the dirt fields and said, oh, man, here come all the locusts. And it's, by the way, the locust might not stop for a while if you're a Purdue fan. Like, you're probably not going to get great in the short term or long term, and it doesn't look like they're getting bad anytime soon.
It's also tough because I think when Barry Odom took that job after the year he had at UNLV, I think a lot of Purdue fans, and like it's early, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but sort of thought like, okay, we have our Cignetti type. He's gone to
sure
this you know, a lower level program, not FCS program, but you know, a G5 program. He's sort of like engineered a quick turnaround, and now he's gonna. And that is not the way the Purdue year played out at all. Not even close to it.
Yeah.
Tennessee fans are mostly all happy that they beat Florida. They're mostly all pissed that they lost to Vanderbilt. And beyond that, this quote best explains their feelings. Before the season, I would have bet on Tennessee having an 8-4 record, and they finish 8-4, and it feels not great still. I think because the Georgia game felt winnable, and the Vandy game was the only game that felt out of reach. Basically, I don't know what this year meant, if anything.
So, spoiler, we're going to break this down on the Coach Goss show on PhantomIsland.show. Become a subscriber today. And inadvertently, we bunched all these tapings together. It's fascinating because, spoiler, they're on there for table setting 26. And it's hard for me to say that. I'm going off of what I've been told, and then what I feel is secondary. And yeah. That response from your survey, I think, is dead on, where it's like, we did exactly what we were supposed to in a year with like extraneous circumstances, and I'm still a little fussy.
It's a good reminder that more so, much more so than the NFL, I would say, your record is one thing. How you get there is like,
yeah,
it's so crucial. Like, sure. I think you could swap. I know Oklahoma was viewed as like this big failure or whatever. I think it's really hard to overemphasize how much the Vanderbilt loss stings.
Sticks. Yes. It's Diego at home and or not losing the shootout against Georgia.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right, the last two I've grouped here because I like the dichotomy of them. We're skipping Texas and Texas A&M. They're what you think they are. A&M all hated losing to Texas.
Yeah,
Texas
yeah,
can't decide if its best win was A&M or Oklahoma. But I want to. I have a quote here from a Texas Tech fan and a quote from a Wisconsin fan.
Okay.
I'm going to start with a Wisconsin fan. It's not the losing that's upsetting. It's the fact that everyone in charge of the Badgers says the way to win is to give them more money. And I want to sit with this for a second because I think it's something I have sort of taken for granted. And UVA is probably the best recent example of this, of like, okay, you have a coach you're not quite sure is it. One move you can make is like, let's put some money in the pot. Let's be aggressive in the portal and let's see if we can like boost his fortunes, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like, Luke Fickell was not brought in under the same circumstances as Tony. Tony Elliott was, you know, like the expectations were very different of these two when they each came in. And so if I'm a Wisconsin fan and I'm being told like, hey, this team, which has not been good and not just like hasn't been to the Big Ten championship or hasn't won 9 games or isn't competing for the playoff, but like it's getting pushed around by teams in the Big Ten you used to dominate.
Right.
Looks sloppy. Looks like disorganized, and I'm being told like the only way through this crevasse is through your wallet. That shit sucks.
Yeah, but they're not gonna pay those kids. They're gonna pay better kids.
I get it. And here's the flip side. This is the Texas Tech quote. Turns out money can buy happiness.
It's great. The end.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.